Welcome to the Ask Brian Podcast Radio Show, where you'll hear from some of the most successful founders and CEOs of businesses and startups, sharing their best advice for success and even some stories on how their mistakes actually make them even more successful. Now, here are your hosts, Brian and Tracy.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're listening to the Ask Brian Radio Show on KHS 1220 in 98.1 FM. Well, every Thursday, 1 to 2 p.m. on the Pacific Coast, we have a show called the Ask Brian Radio Show, and we discuss business. We'll either have somebody who's a founder of a company, a unique idea, or something that we can teach people a lesson about business. We've been doing this for 7 years, and every week people are always asking the question, why is this show called Ask Brian? My name is Peter. Tracy's our co-host. Why are we called Ask Brian with an E? And everybody that I know was spelling Brian B-R-Y-A-N, B-R-I-A-N. Nobody's spelling Brian with an E unless they were from Ireland or they were going down to the Irish pub. O'Brien's, okay? But nobody was spelling Brian with an E, and obviously you can't spell. But we have a resident expert. See, I did that right, Tracy? A resident expert.
Yes, I accept that challenge.
That's great. So we're going to explain to the audience and also to our guests, if he's never listened to our show, maybe he has, why Brian is spelled with an E. So give us some reasons why.
Well, I always like to kick it off with acknowledging our engineer, our extraordinary engineer, Jen.
Thank you.
And the audience was clapping too, so yeah.
Well, we literally couldn't do the show without you, Jen, and we appreciate you so much. And
you bet.
So, gratitude doesn't start with an A, but it doesn't end here.
Now she's going to ask for a raise.
Well, now that you gave me that idea, yeah.
Okay,
I need hazard.
Hey, Jerry, how you doing?
It's hazard pay,
Jerry,
working with Peter. It's lovely working with Tracy. Hazard pay on the Peter side. So yeah,
absolutely.
Yes, I know the feeling. I do know the feeling. And here's the thing: we couldn't do the show without our engineer, but we also couldn't do the show as well without our experts that we have on as our guests. And I'm so excited to be able to talk through our guest today, because it's going to be a really interesting perspective on new journeys and new pathways and really new entrepreneurial endeavors. And E for entrepreneur, because most of our guests are entrepreneurs or they're providing services to help entrepreneurs grow their businesses. And most of them are experts in their field. And we define expert, of course, as someone who has invested and worked a minimum of 10,000 hours in their established field or industry. Most of our experts do well surpass that. But if you need the math on that of what that takes, it's roughly 50 to 52 weeks a year of working 40 hours a week. Although, of course, we say every week, and we know it to be true, that most entrepreneurs spend way more than 40 hours a week when they're starting up their businesses. So that's one of the reasons why you want to listen to the Ask Brian Radio Show, because we help shortcut your learning curve so you can get to expert status faster. And with all of that said, with so much of my enthusiasm, I know, Peter, you must feel very
excited.
I'm hitting the yay button like against my will. I don't want to encourage.
And I can't believe I've never thought of this before, but my eardrum is now busted.
I think that's just the tinnitus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I know, Peter, you have no empathy for Jen or our
What is
audience,
empathy? What is empathy? I never heard of such a thing.
Exactly. If you have to ask.
Narcissists live forever.
Yeah, long reign the narcissism. Okay. Woohoo! Hashtag no support. All right. Well, we're having a lot of fun, but not as much fun as we're going to have when we bring our guest on. So I always like to save my favorite E for last, right?
Well, okay, but you did miss one big thing, even though you kind of...
Oh, I did, and it's all about the education. I did not work the education component in, but I did imply the education component when I talked about shortcutting the learning curve. But yeah, let's be really specific, why don't we? This show is here to educate you!
Woohoo! Absolutely. I'll give you a save on that one, so you did save yourself.
Thank you.
And there is a different definition between implied and express. That was an express definition. You gave the earlier was implied of what education was.
I appreciate you expressing that difference.
Well, nothing if you're not anal and you're an attorney, so what are you going to say? All right, now, we have a question for you. Everybody has watched that movie, Grease, and everybody in that show says, Grease lightning is, but we don't know what that means. So, Tracy, we know
means electrifying, and that's what we have in store for you today.
Woohoo! All right, now, we're going to introduce our guest, Chuck. Chuck, are you still there, or did you, like, say, I'm out of here, I don't know what I got myself into, I'm never coming back, or are you there?
I'm here.
All right. You survived part one. Okay, first question for you. Why don't you introduce yourself? Chuck, you've got, and your last name is Chuck Schwerin?
Sure. Chuck Schwerin. I'm calling to you from Binghamton, New York, upstate New York, and thank you for the invitation.
No problem.
I'm here to talk about a debut novel that talking about E for education. It both educates and entertains. It's a page-turning authentic adventure.
So before we get into that, people want to know a little bit about your background. Obviously, we know where you are, and you know we know where to send the assassins now. But
so I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've started, I've founded four startups in biotech or computer science realm, and currently working on establishing a renewable energy microgrid for communities in upstate New York that have historically been shortchanged when it comes to, you know, access to low-cost and reliable energy. So it's in the technology field.
Well, that was very interesting because you're combining technology and biology, and I'm thinking about what just happened today where Elon Musk had somebody that they implanted into their head so they could have paralysis, whatever, and I think that wasn't working too well. Do you know about that story?
You're talking about the Elon Musk?
Yes.
Innovation?
Yes.
Which has reached, 100 days today, I think.
Correct. And I read in the news today that it was malfunctioning.
Elon did not include that in his press release.
For obvious reasons. All right. Well, but because he's talking about biology and computers, and I'm thinking like, well, maybe is that what you're working on? Are you working on a Frankenstein thing or what?
Well, one of the startups was a pacemaker for your second heart. Your second heart is actually the deep calf muscle in your leg. If not for those muscles, we would die because of gravity. There's no way for blood to get back to our first heart without the pumps in our calves to fight gravity and get that circulation back where it belongs. So that's one of the startups that certainly is in the, you know, the biological realm. Yeah.
Well, that is definitely educational, and definitely people have just learned something that I did not know and other people did not know. And I guess, you know, I could go off on a tangent and say, well, what about in space? But we're going to do that later on if we run out of time. But we do want to know a little bit about this latest venture you have. And so my understanding is you decided to write a book. So my first question is, before we get into that, what made you decide to write a book?
I ask myself that every other day. I guess it sort of wrote itself. I mean, the impetus for it was as a result of spending 3 years teaching at a very intense junior boarding school in the Adirondacks, junior meaning grades 4 through 9, and not for special education, but ask yourself how many families choose to send their children away at that age for boarding school when it's not for special education. This was a working farm, John Dewey-inspired school, which emphasized experiential education, progressive education, where the sort of the Adirondacks were part of, were a major piece of the classroom. And the experiences of those 3 years with some, you know, very inspirational teachers and children, and an opportunity to guide children into mountains in the Sierras and the Canadian Rockies, as well as upstate New York and New Hampshire, just sort of, you know, inspired me to start to put together a page-turning adventure that has two parallel tracks. One track involving the main protagonists, a 15-year-old ninth grader and a 63-year-old headmaster, who are haunted by events that they've caused and for which they still struggle to address. And then there's a parallel track of two recent escapees from a medium security prison nearby, one of whom is a lumberjack who's very comfortable in the woods, and the other, a Puerto Rican kid from the Lower East Side of Manhattan, who is not comfortable in the woods but is desperate to get home to help his family, who are struggling for a number of reasons, and makes a critical decision to join the lumberjack. And these two parallel tracks then proceed through the book with disastrous results.
Well, it sounds like they meet,
culminate in a real coming to terms and being accountable for one's actions for all these main characters.
And now, this book is fiction or nonfiction?
Oh, it's fiction, but interesting point. In, I think, 2015, there was an escape from a prison called Dannemora in the Adirondacks. And I had started writing this before that, but when this escape occurred, two men wandering about the Adirondacks, I felt like, oh my God, they've destroyed my novel, because mine will be seen as derivative when in fact I preceded this event. But they didn't go into the mountains, and the stories are very different. But, you know, it has been something that's been cooking on my stove for more years than I'd like to admit. But to get it actually published when you have no experience as an author is a real trick, especially when it's fiction. Nonfiction is easier traditionally to get published, but fiction is quite a trick.
Well, so one question we have is, since you can see things in the future, you know, maybe you can write a next book about world peace, because obviously you picked the two prisoners, so maybe you can write about something more consequential about maybe world peace or something along those lines, since you have this foresight.
Well, I have started a sequel, taking several of these characters 10 years on to see what their lives turned out to be. So Ghosts of Glencoe is the name of this novel, and the ghosts refer to the events that haunt these characters, not that there's a haunted house involved. Glencoe is the name of the school, as well as a favorite climbing spot in Scotland from which the headmaster originates. And in the prologue, you learn right away what's the basis for his ghost, which he carries across the Atlantic with him and struggles to address.
Wow, very interesting book. And we're going to learn later on in the show how to get a copy of that book. Now, is it published yet or not?
Yes, it's available for pre-order. I resisted the notion of self-publishing, probably because of my own vanity, but I wanted to see whether the professional publishing world would see the value of it. So it took longer than it would have had I chosen to self-publish, but, you know, that's my own, as I said, my own vanity. But yes, it's published by North Country Books, which is an imprint of Roman and Littlefield, which heretofore has published only nonfiction books. So my agent first had to sell them on publishing a book of fiction, and then secondarily sell them on my particular book of fiction. So this is the first one that they're doing, and it's officially out June 18, but available on Amazon or on Roman and Littlefield for pre-order.
So let's go over a couple of things. So people that don't know much about the book industry, so how did you find an agent?
So at one point, about 5 years ago, I was editing a climbing magazine called Adirondack Peaks for the Adirondack 46er Club. And in searching for subject matter content, I contacted a woman with whom I was very familiar by reputation. Her name was Laura Waterman. She's very well published she and her late husband Guy did a seminal work on wilderness ethics, as well as a history of mountaineering in the Northeast. She was a homesteader. An interesting story, and her husband had decided in his mid-60s, he didn't want to get old. And he announced that he was going to climb his favorite mountain in the middle of the winter and sit there until he froze to death. And she wrote a memoir about reconciling that decision, which took 18 months to come to fruition. And I wanted to interview her. So we got to know each other. She learned that I had written this manuscript, asked to read it. And she really liked it. And she said, let me introduce you to my agent. The agent subsequently found North Country Books, and that's how it got published.
So at this point, you had already, so when you were writing the book initially, you're writing it without knowledge of whether or not you'd have to self-publish or you could find somebody to publish it for you, correct?
Right, right. I was writing it for myself, for my family, and then came to the realization that, hey, this is not bad. I resisted my family telling me, oh, you know, this is really good, but that's my family. So it wasn't until, you know, I shared it with some outside folks that I didn't know, like Laura, that I became persuaded that, hey, maybe I actually do have something. And so I'm very pleased with the result, but scary business putting yourself out there like that.
You mentioned the word Laura, but nobody knows who Laura is. So, I mean, I may know who Laura is.
Laura Waterman, the woman that I did the article with for Adirondack Peaks.
Okay. And so then you used her, the agent that Laura had, correct?
Correct, right. And she said to me, you know, he won't take you on unless he thinks he can sell it. And he made it a much richer brew and, as I said, was able to persuade Roman Littlefield that it was time they, you know, they dipped their toe into the fiction waters. So we'll see how that goes.
All right. Tracy, she's also known as AKA Pivot, P-I-V-O-T.
I'm known as a lot of things on this show. I don't know if that's
I was trying to be nice. I was trying to be nice.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that more.
don't get used to it. Don't get used to it, though.
No worries. I'm not going to. All right. Well, I wanted to dig a little bit deeper. It's not a pivot per se, but it is a little bit of a deeper dive. And you were mentioning earlier on the show about weighing the differences between self-publishing your book and going the route of a traditional publishing pathway. And I know you lovingly referred to it as an ego decision, but I do think there are a lot of people who are listening who are making a decision right now as a writer to self-publish or wait and see if they can get an agent. So could you tell us a little bit about your thought process around that specifically and what were some of the pros and cons in your mind?
Sure. So the major pros were that, you know, if you're dealing with a traditional publisher, then you can leverage their sales force. You know, they've got relationships with bookstores, you know, across the country and across the globe, frankly. So going with a larger publisher is a real advantage because it gives you access to, obviously, more bookstores. It's much more difficult if you're self-publishing and you have to promote on your own to get a bookstore to put a book on their shelves. Some of them will work with you on a consignment basis, but that's different than, you know, they're ordering directly from the publisher where you have sort of more legitimacy. The other aspect is that you get editorial to some degree, lesser or more, you can get editorial help from the publisher as well as help with designing the cover art and the layout and the choice of font, the choice of paper, how it's put together, you know, physically. And so there certainly are advantages when you have a, you know, a company behind you. That's not to disparage self-publishing, but it just puts everything on your shoulders to promote, you know, your work. Now, in my case, because I did not have an established name in the fiction world, and Roman and Littlefield is accustomed to promoting academic books, they we're not offering, you know, a major budget for promotion. So a lot of that is still going to fall to me, but at least they have, you know, the established sales organization to work with bookstores. So as I'm setting up a mini, you know, book tour, the bookstores have independent booksellers, you know, have indicated to me that, oh, you know, we have relationships with the distributor. So, you know, that puts me on a sort of at a different level in their eyes anyway.
And you were mentioning then that, and that was going to be my next question about the marketing, if they were providing marketing support. So have you been building a social network of fans and followers up until this point, or are you starting from scratch to do that?
Well, yes, and both. I'm starting from scratch. One of the things that I've done is create a business Facebook page for the book as opposed to my own personal page. You know, I'm not someone who posts a lot on social media. This is getting me out of my comfort zone. But I did grit my teeth and let my network, my Facebook network, know that, you know, that I was pleased to announce this launch, and am following that up with an ad campaign on the business page, the Facebook business page, which is going to be targeted geographically around the zip codes, you know, in and around where I'm going to have events with bookstores, and relying on the publisher to do their own sort of whatever they're going to do nationally. They are also sending out reviewer copies to sort of the major outlets that potentially could do book reviews, Kirkus, The Times, and so on and so forth. I have tempered expectations about how many book reviews I'm going to get. Those make, you know, really big differences in terms of visibility. But honestly, you know, I did not do this because I expected to make a lot of money. I'm doing it for the adventure, the journey, the experience primarily.
Well, and I think there's a lot to be said from a mindset perspective of pushing yourself outside your comfort zone. So what would you say has been the most uncomfortable part about this new journey?
That's a great question. It's self-promotion. It's not in my nature to do that, and I really have pushed myself. And, you know, as I do, well, one of the thoughts I have is to do short excerpts on Instagram as a way of teasing people to become interested in the story. And I'm about to kick that off. We'll see how it goes. But that I've never done it before. And, you know, when I was in nursery school, I'd never done a peanut butter and jelly sandwich before. And I figured out how to do it.
Well, and you figured out how to launch four startups, too. So I think you're probably going to do okay. All right. Okay. So you're integrating some Instagram, which is great. You're doing some book signings, some book tours, and you're also working on the sequel. So I am going to do a pivot here, and that is to talk through the creative process of actually, there probably, at least even in my circle of friends, almost everyone has either thought about writing a book, wanted to write a book, has thought of an idea for writing a book, but there are very few people who actually go from idea to publish. And I know that that must take a significant amount of discipline. I'd love for you to share your workflow and how do you consistently create for your books.
So, you know, I'd like to tell you that I get up at 5 a.m. every day and write for 2 hours before, you know, my regular day starts. But that isn't the case. You know, when you have an inspiration, an idea, to some degree, it wants to write itself. If it's really moving you, it may occur at 7 in the morning. It may occur at midnight. You know, I kept a pad and a pen beside my bed. And instead of sleeping, sometimes I'm waking up and jotting down an idea that I think can, you know, burgeon into a chapter. All, you know, in the service of moving the story forward. And as I said at the outset here, I was seeking to educate as well as entertain. So, you know, for example, there is pretty detailed and excruciating search and rescue that takes place, a couple of them actually. And I didn't just want to write from, you know, my imagination, but I wanted to find out from experts how to do this, how to write this and explain it, describe it properly. So reaching out to folks who are experts in whatever field you're working on, I think makes the story more authentic and is certainly part of the creative process. And then the trick is to weave it in so that it feels natural and not, didactic.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think everyone's creative process is different, without a doubt. One of the things that I've read that is based on a lot of creative inspiration type books around either creating content, whether it's written content, publishing a book, is that you just have to do something every single day, and that you have to, like, make yourself just allow the time for it. So it sounds like that you are doing that, but maybe you're just doing it in spurts or in various ways, not necessarily the same time every day.
Well, the way I would add to it is, you know, when there's something inspirational, that will generate, let's say, a new chapter. When I'm not feeling that way, I'll go back and I can't tell you how many rewrites. I mean, countless. And reading your work 2 days later is a very, very important and necessary step to making sure that what you're writing is tight, is concise, is not purple in the prose that you're utilizing. And, letting other people read it, of course, is part of that. But, you know, reading your own work is as much of, you know, of value as sort of, you know, entertaining a new chapter and a new avenue. You've got to write, rewrite, and rewrite again.
Is there a thing as over-editing yourself, though? Like, do you get to a place where you have to cut yourself off from continuing to rewrite and just
Absolutely.
Say, hey, okay, this is it?
Absolutely. You know, Mark Twain famously said, I would have written you a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time. And, you know, so it's important to be concise and to edit yourself, but you can become immobilized if you can't let it go and move on. So that's a trick.
Yes. Well, you know, thank you for sharing, and especially all your vulnerabilities around your pathway to publishing, if you will. And I just know that you probably have so many more opportunities to make impact with our audience. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, to connect with you, to continue this conversation, let us know how they can do that. And then also let us know how they can pre-order the book.
Thanks for the offer. So I have a company whose email would probably be the best way to reach me if they want more information. And that would be Chuck S, as in Sam, at and one word, Bead Jar Strategies, BEADJARSTRATEGIES.com, BeadJarStrategies.com. So I'm happy to answer anybody's questions and send them links to how to pre-order the book. The easiest way is to go to the book page, which is Ghosts of Glencoe, GLENCOE.com. Ghostsofglencoe.com will get you to a synopsis, to about 8 blurbs from folks who have graciously read and responded to the book, some of whom you may know, and links to the publisher page, Roman.com, that's ROWMAN.com, where one can pre-order, or at Amazon.com and just do a search on Ghosts of Glencoe, and you can get there.
Well, that's so exciting. Congratulations. I can't wait for you to have big success on this book and the sequel following it. And for those of you who want to get in touch, see the book, learn more about it, don't forget that this radio show is repurposed as a podcast, so you can re-listen to all the tips and suggestions. You can get access to all of the links that were just mentioned, and just overall, just enjoy us one more time. And you can do that on all of your favorite listening platforms, including, of course, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, and others. And it is the Ask Brian podcast. That's ASKBRIEN, Ask Brian, the podcast. Peter?
Well, thank you very much. So, Chuck, one of our people in the studio wanted to know, what was the biggest challenge in this book process?
Clearly, for me, the biggest challenge was putting myself out there to contact independent bookstores to say, hey, would you be interested in scheduling me to do a talk and persuading them why, you know, they should schedule me, and what was it about this topic and about me that would ensure that an audience would actually show up? So I'm about to kick that off. As I said, this was really, out of my comfort zone, but it took the attitude, you know, this is something new. This is interesting. This is a journey you haven't been on before. And, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. So I've got 6 or 7 scheduled, and I'm excited to, you know, see how it all plays out. I've been a teacher. I'm okay in front of folks, but talking about what I created is a bit different than teaching people about trigonometry.
Well, yeah, I know a little bit about cosines and tangents. And actually, I usually like to go off on a tangent. We have about 30 seconds left. I think you already answered the question. But basically, in overcoming this challenge, I mean, so how did you get on the phone to call up these book companies? I mean, what did you do to psych yourself out?
Well, I Googled, got emails for folks that are in charge of events, reached out to them. Beforehand, I put together a pitch deck, which included the synopsis, sample chapter, the blurbs that I referred to before, so that they would have, as well as an author bio, so they'd have a sense of who I was, what I was pitching, and give them a sense of something to react to. Then if they bit, we worked on scheduling, and it seems to have worked out.
Wow. Thanks. That was a very good story. We wish you the best of luck in selling your book. Appreciating you as a guest.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Tracy. You're listening to the Ask Brian Radio Show on KHS 1220 and 98.1 FM. Over and out!
Thank you for tuning in to the Ask Brian Radio Show. You can listen to us every Thursday on KTHS AM 1220 and FM 98.1 or via Facebook Live or anytime wherever you listen to your podcasts. Visit AskBrian.com to join the conversation and ask us your business questions, and we'll answer them on our next episode. That's AskBrian.com.